This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to eighth time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Monday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Hope you had a great weekend. Good to be with you. I am Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. How are we doing this morning, my friend?
I'm good. I'll tell you what. You know, I was looking forward to the long weekend with the Thursday night game and everything.
Yeah.
It turned out to be not so hot. It probably wasn't until yesterday that I even felt about thinking about the Texans. I really wish if they were going to play the game that they did versus the Jets, I wish it had been on a Sunday so that Tuesday or Wednesday we'd be thinking about the Lions. More so, with the Texans' disappointing performance, which is what they do in the Meadowlands.
Yeah.
They apparently go up and they let the Jets expose everything that's wrong with them and everything that you feel bad about with the Texans. The Jets in the Meadowlands are the place to do it.
Okay, so you spent at least the initial part of your we'll call it a long weekend because we didn't have any football. You were still scrubbing the taste out of your mouth from the Jets game still on Friday and Saturday this week.
Yeah, I didn't even want to think about it. On Friday, I watched the game over again, and then I said, I gotta take a break.
Okay.
I gotta take a break from all of this. And then I started in on Saturday and just kind of watched some stuff defensively, started making some excuses for him. You know?
Okay, so
I'm back on the road to recovery.
So you were still staying somewhat immersed in the Texans world over the weekend a little bit.
I was
at the Golden Nugget, my friend, and I gotta tell you, I didn't think about them one time while I was there. It was a beautiful, glorious thing. The only time I really thought about them were times when I opened up my phone and I looked down, and what did I see? A very animated video of my co-host Seth Payne screaming at a camera, and I'm like,
yeah,
I'm gonna put my phone back down. I was enjoying this world where I was gambling irresponsibly, watching games in a sportsbook with my wife, ordering chicken wings. Apparently eating sushi at 2 in the morning that I don't recall at all the night that we got there. I woke up Saturday morning and Amy's like, that was a good trip we made down to Lily's, back down to the lobby to go eat sushi. And I'm like, we did what? And she said, we went down and ate sushi at 2 in the morning. And I said, okay, well, what are those two cupcakes doing on the table? Apparently, I bought two cupcakes at the chocolate store on the way back up to the room.
That's what they say goes best with sushi.
Well, 2 in the morning,
sushi,
apparently, the intent was to chase all the sushi we just ate with two cupcakes when I got back to the room. They never got eaten.
Worst things you could wake up finding out you did, next day. It's better that than you got arrested or married or something.
I had a great time, man, just unplugging. Yeah. And I realized once again how great it was to just sit and watch football wall-to-wall on a Saturday and a Sunday. Not that I love my Texans game day stuff. I love it. It's one of the favorite things that I do. But every now and then, once every 9 weeks or so, it is good to be able to sit. It's good to be able to sit down and watch all the other NFL games. However, it is very depressing seeing how easy it seems to be for even the bad teams to protect their quarterbacks for more than 2.5 seconds. That part's a little depressing.
It was kind of impressive how easily the Lions dispatched the Green Bay Packers, a team that the Texans had great trouble with. But Detroit, a dome team, going and playing in a freezing monsoon. Yeah. It was like a monsoon, but worse, because it was probably like 50, low 50s, high 40s there in Green Bay, and windy, and it didn't matter.
Didn't matter.
The Lions who, by the way, the Texans play on Sunday, looks to be the proverbial firing on all cylinders. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a team. Yeah, that's and I guess that's a good place to start. Like when this it is Lions week. Lions coming to town for Sunday Night Football. And at the beginning of the year, my prediction for this week was that, hey, this will be the game where the experts are saying these are the two dark horse, darling, potential Super Bowl teams. Mm-hmm. This is a preview of the matchup that we could see in the Super Bowl where America is backing both teams. You know, because neither team has even been to a Super Bowl, let alone won a Super Bowl. This will be... I said, Seth, that at the beginning of the year, that the words preview of a Super Bowl would be uttered many, many times over the course of the week leading to this game. And I feel now Detroit has held up their end of the bargain. I don't know that the Texans put an effort out there on Thursday that are going to have the talking heads on the various shows saying that we could see this again in New Orleans in February.
Right. Yeah, this is...
Let's say fix some things off
quick. It's definitely a moment of reckoning here as the Texans have three nationally televised primetime games in a row.
Yeah.
And in their first effort at it didn't go so hot. But it was Thursday Night Football, which, you know, it's not the same cachet as getting your butts beat on Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football.
The Jets, man. Who's the Jets?
Yes, right, yeah. But, Sean, I think I trust it for the most part.
I know you got to a happier place by Saturday or Sunday, but I'm not here for the excuses.
Some of the excuses I was making for the Texans is I tried just for my own sanity. Not because I've got an agenda or anything like that. I just wanted to feel and believe like, okay, the Texans allowed three straight touchdown drives in the second half. There were some odd occurrences there that went along with it. But I think the biggest thing, if I were really trying to just not think about the offense at all, was that the two Garrett Wilson touchdowns were both, like for one, the shin catch. The shin catch was a 5% catch probability.
I was going to say, these were two catches that would have Callis and Blum both going, well, that was a 5-star catch, Blummer.
Yeah, exactly. Because even Sam Warren from the Chronicle did a nice breakdown of just how the game was different with Will Anderson in the game and without him. Mm-hmm. So I went back and I broke down a few of those videos. And it is true. Like, Will Anderson made a difference. But even on one of those plays where... The biggest difference when Will Anderson was in the game is that he commands an extra blocker.
Yeah.
So the Jets would keep a tight end in to block, which makes it a lot harder to find open guy. You've only got three guys out on routes. So even if the blitz didn't come home, it was still much harder for Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
When Will Anderson's not in there, they could send that tight end out on routes, and it got a lot easier for Aaron Rodgers to just pick and choose. And he dialed up Jalen Petrie in man coverage a couple times. But on that first Garrett Wilson touchdown that he caught on Jalen Petrie, I mean, it was the blitz came home. It was a tough throw for Aaron Rodgers. It wasn't perfect. And yet, I think if you had an actual cornerback covering Devontae Adams on that instead of Jalen Petrie,
Wait, hold on. Are you talking about Devontae? You said Garrett Wilson.
Garrett Wilson.
I just want to make sure I know which touchdown
you're talking about. You're right. Yeah, the one over it was Garrett Wilson.
The crosser over the middle.
Yeah, the crosser over the middle. Then, like, this is what we talked about. What I was worried about all training camp was Jalen Petrie is not a cornerback. And whenever we watched him line up in the slot in man coverage versus Tank Dell or Stephon Diggs or anybody else during training camp, it didn't look good. It didn't look good at all. And if you're put in a position where, you know, he's gonna be charged with that, you can't rely on it. It's not Jalen Petrie's fault. It's a team construction issue.
Yeah.
And honestly, if they went all through training camp and thought, yeah, we're cool with this, I'd be shocked. I'd honestly be shocked because we were there. We saw him. Jalen Petrie could not cover those guys in the slot. Yeah. So you think he's gonna do it against Garrett Wilson or Devontae Adams?
Nope.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. You were. I was thinking about that this weekend. Like the two. That Jalen Petrie covering out of the slot in the interior of the offensive line were two things that you were hammering hard during the month of August that I feel like at least relative to me, I wasn't as worried about those things because I think I was a little more caught up in the glitz of everything they did in the offseason,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And you were still, you're like, hey guys, these are still two big problems. And the interior of the offensive line has come back to roost in the worst way because it puts C.J. Stroud in danger and B, has had him at least the last couple games looking somewhat jittery. Am I worried this is a long-term thing with C.J. Stroud? Not yet. But I don't like the way it's looked.
I think if you watch that game and you didn't know anything about C.J. Stroud at all, you'd say, well, it looks like a young quarterback who's not quite sure of himself.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. there's times where, man, just I don't know why he didn't throw that. Yeah. I don't know why he didn't. And part of it, you know, I sent you the one boot where C.J. ended up running, and he had both John Metchie and Xavier Hutchinson coming across the field. And I felt like with where those guys were, if it were Nico Collins and Tank Dell, I think the ball would have come out of CJ's hand.
Well, they also probably would have had another yard or two on the defender.
Yeah. But I still, though, I do think there's a matter of trust there.
No doubt.
He's got that. He's very, very confident just letting it fly with those guys.
If there weren't a yard or two extra of separation, he still would have thrown it like he does to Nico
throws.
On 3rd and 11 against the Colts in week
yeah.
one.
Yeah. So in the last couple of weeks, there have been more inaccurate throws that you wouldn't typically see.
Yeah.
So it just feels like, yeah, the pressure is getting to him.
Yeah.
Like it's starting to mess with his internal clock.
Well, they'll have no choice but to move on from Kenyon Green because the news came down, I think, on Friday. Kenyon Green done for the season with the shoulder injury he sustained when C.J. Stroud landed on the shoulder in a big schmoz after a play on Thursday night. Did you see Kenyon Green's dad on Twitter over the weekend respond?
Only because you sent it to me.
Yeah.
I didn't realize this.
Follow Henry Green on Twitter. This has just popped up on my timeline. But there was a person on Twitter, CMallory7, who I recognize that Twitter ID, I believe a listener. Is it possible for our O-line coach to go out with injury as well? Because that guy is worthless, all caps. Henry Green replies, facts. Henry Green, not a Chris Strausser fan, I guess.
It's C.J. Stroud had a comment in the post game that I really didn't catch the first time around.
Yeah,
or I didn't catch the full significance of it. I kind of brushed it off.
Do you want to play it here? Or do you want to do it? We've got more than 45 seconds.
Let's play it when we come back.
Okay.
It's, there might be. I worry that there's some dissension from within.
Okay. As bad as it's been the last month or so in the offensive line, I'm at the stage now where I'm waiting for some dissension. I'd actually like a little dissension within.
Yeah, give me dissension.
Yeah, that's true.
Make a move, something. Trade for somebody. Swap out an O-line coach or something. I don't know what's going on.
Well, I think we'll get to that at 7 o'clock. Like, we've got some big questions coming out of this long weekend with the Texans that we've got to get to, both medical and trade deadline coming up about 36 hours away. So we'll get to all that here on a Reaction Monday. We're still reacting to Thursday night, reacting to a weekend of NFL football as well. Did CJ hand a dissent from within on his postgame press conference on Thursday night? We'll get to that. And it's a big day for the Astros as well. We'll explain why to you coming up next.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Hurts in the gun. He backpedals. He's looking. Still looking. He fires it out in the flat to Barkley, who beats one man, spins past another, leaps over a third, and comes down at the 30.
What was that? I've never seen that move, and I've been watching football all my life.
That was that audio courtesy of the Eagles Radio Network. I thought the same thing. I'm like, man, I've watched decades and decades. I've been watching football for well over 40 years now. And I figured I've seen everything when it comes to a move a guy can make or something that can happen on a play. I've never seen that before. If you saw it yesterday, you know exactly what it is we're talking about. That was Saquon Barkley jumping, leaping, leapfrogging backwards over a Jaguar defender. That's your 5-hour energy play of the game. 5-hour energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. There was no Texans game on Sunday. That play deserved its own spotlight right there.
That was incredible. I had tweeted out that it wasn't, you know, the NFL isn't rigged, but we are definitely living in a simulation.
Yeah.
This is, we are in the Matrix, which is cool because now I got some traction amongst various simulation truthers. I've got a few flat earthers that think I'm on their side now. So I might lean hard into that niche. I think I'm gonna go into that world. They put out some glitzy YouTube videos.
There are clicks available in that world, I'm told. People do click on those things.
That's how I want to live my life, Sean.
For sure.
No way to prove that we're not in this simulation, but it was pretty damn impressive.
Yeah. Barkley's had a great year, man. He's had a great year for Philadelphia. They beat Jacksonville yesterday. Hey, shout out to the Vikings. Did the Texans a solid last night against the Colts. Kept that gap at two games for the Texans. That was nice.
We still don't, and the Vikings are in that world where, hey, they lost two games in a row. And, all right, well, we just won a squeaker versus the Colts, I guess. Are we back?
Well,
are we back?
If Darnold could have just protected the football. Like, the Colts sucked last night. The only touchdown they scored was on a Darnold sack fumble return for a touchdown by Grover Stewart, or by Kenny Moore. Grover Stewart had the sack. Yeah, the Colts. Yeah, Flacco. We'll get to that in headlines. Flacco might be a pumpkin. I'm just saying.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
Of course he is. No, which is great because that means that there's huge dissent probably within the Colts organization, but the fan base is melting down. Yeah, I can't believe you benched Anthony Richardson just because he's an awful quarterback.
So this was interesting. Did C.J. Stroud hint at dissent from within in his post-game press conference? Now, I did not. The dog whistle did not go off for me, but I'd seen you found this audio. I saw other people reacting to it similar to the way you did as well.
Yeah, Jason Bristol actually from KHOU was the first one where I'd like, oh yeah, I listened to all these clips real briefly on 3 hours of sleep Friday morning.
Yep.
And I didn't catch the significance of it. And yeah. Okay. CJ just kind of casually mentioned something that I don't want to read too much into, but I don't want to skate by it.
Okay.
Well, listen to CJ at the beginning and about the first 10 seconds of this clip.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, we've had a couple wake-up calls this year. I would say, you know, we just got to honestly just play football better, execute better, stop pointing the finger and realize, you know, at the end of the day, like, this is not winning football and we can't keep squeezing our way by every game. You know, we are a really good football team. We have a lot of really good football players. Once we buy into the systems and what is being, you know, coached, and also we got to be able to have leadership to take over. So, you know, I believe, you know, this isn't the end, but this is definitely a great wake-up call for us to, you know, tighten up the ship. And, you know, this is now playoff football. It's November, December. So we got to be able to – this is going to be the chunk of our schedule. A lot of great teams we're playing on prime time, and, you know, we got to be able to find ways to win.
Okay, the one thing, and I know we're going to get to the pointing the finger thing. The one thing that I heard in addition to that in there too is that CJ is just as sick of the winning on the last possession every week thing,
right?
As everybody else is, as everybody else is, and that group, which I consider myself part of, gets criticized often for, like, hey man, they're winning at least, and it's like, no, when you have the habits that allow Jacksonville and Chicago and these other teams to hang around in these games, it manifests itself in a loss to the Jets eventually on Thursday night football.
No, it's like you're in high school football and you're in a horrible, you know, you're playing it out with in your crappy league, and then all of a sudden you go to the playoffs and it's just a whole different
deal. Get the
doors
blown off.
But the two quotes in there, we got to execute better, stop pointing the finger.
Stop.
Okay. And then also, once we buy into the system, so we got to stop pointing the finger. He didn't say we can't start pointing fingers.
No.
He said we got to stop pointing the finger, and once we buy into the system. So who's not buying into the system? Who's pointing fingers?
Well, I'll tell you one, Kenyon Green's dad. He's definitely pointing the fingers and not buying into the system.
The offensive line coach. I'll tell you, this is the thing, and this is where I'm torn. I'm the first to say, yeah, hell yeah, go ahead and get yourself an offensive guard somewhere in free agency.
Yeah.
But the problem is, there are so many teams in the NFL that get by with journeyman guards, and they get the most out of those guys. And I think there's times where Kenyon Green or Kendrick Green or Shaq Mason or Juice Scruggs, there's times where some of the, like, I swear at times they'd be better off just standing in place because they're out of position. They're not getting to their blocks. They're doing all of these things, and it gets compounded when you have good defensive linemen like Quinnen Williams or to the Javon Kinlaw there from the other night. They wreck an entire play by getting penetration or beating their block. And that, at some point, as bad as this offensive line has been at pass protection and handling movement and any kind of chicanery from the defensive line, that comes back to coaching. And a combination of Chris Strausser and Bobby Slowick, they're just flat out not getting it done right now.
Yeah. But when you say buy into the system, like is CJ, does that mean CJ believes in the scheme and it's the offensive line's fault? Or does that mean,
I think
you're saying, it sounds like maybe the system needs to change a little.
Well, no, because he's saying we got to buy into this. This guy's got to buy into the system. Right. So I feel like he believes it. So it's a matter of who else on the offense isn't buying into the system or believing it.
Right.
Is it the tight ends? Is it the wide receivers?
Yeah.
Is it just the offensive line? I have no idea. But I wish they would. Whatever the system is, I wish they would buy into it. We're 1.5 years into this system.
Yeah. And 1.5 years into it, and it's working worse now than it was last season. You know what I mean? Like, that's the frustrating part, is that the only, talent-wise, the only changes that have been made to this offense, personnel-wise versus last year, talent-wise, it have been improvements. That you haven't lost anything. Like, this is a more talented offensive line than you trotted out there last year, and yet it's playing far worse than the offensive line. The other upgrade you made was Joe Mixon, who's been amazing. That upgrade has worked, but there's nowhere else out there. Everybody else is the same guys, but Dalton Schultz is playing worse this year. You know, you got Nico's hurt. The Mechie and Xavier Hutchinson have not made a step up here when you've needed at least one of them to have made a step up when you lose guys here. The Stephon Diggs knee injury is unfortunate. That's football. That happens, but you didn't have Diggs last year. You know, so that's, you know, when we're comparing this year to last year's personnel, Diggs was gravy to begin with. So that's the frustrating thing for me. It's like, you're exactly right. You're a year and a half into this. This is not a new offensive coordinator. I was told, Seth, the continuity was a positive with this team.
Right.
They're bringing everybody back. Bobby Slowick's back. Gerard Johnson's back. Everybody's back. We're getting healthy again on the offensive line. I was told these were all good things, and yet here we sit heading into Week 10 in a game against what I will say is the best team in football right now. The Detroit Lions, I don't care about records. They are the best team in football right now, and you are 7 days away from getting embarrassed again on national TV on primetime football if you don't get your bleep together on the interior of this offensive line and in other places on this.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, Nico Collins can only bail you out of so much of this. It can make life easier for CJ Stroud in a lot of ways, but it's not going to fix those issues that keep you from being a genuinely really good offense.
Nope.
And look, with the offensive line, we're at a point now where, like you said, most of the guys are the same guys. Everybody that's on there, everybody that's on the offensive line has been in those meeting rooms at least. You know, Kenyon Green had been for all of last season.
Yep.
That it's just impossible not to look at coaching, and you go back to the fact that last year we were two-thirds of the way through the season, and Bobby Slowick was talking about how, Chris Strausser, the O-line coach, had never been in a system like this, and there was a learning curve there. All right, well, I mean, I know from watching O-line coaches operate, as well, like Alex Gibbs Sr. in the Gary Kubiak system, that, man, there is a lot to coaching a system like this. There's a lot of technique. It's not just drawing it up on the whiteboard and showing you what zone blocking is. There's handwork, there's footwork, there's all those things. And right now, the offensive line looks like it's regressed in a lot of ways.
Yep.
So I don't know what's to be done about it in season or what the solution is, but it just, you know, going back to like teams that have had subpar guards over the years, like the Colts forever, they had journeyman offensive linemen who would end up making the Pro Bowl year after year because they Howard Mudd, the offensive line coach, coached the system so well. The Tennessee Titans, when Munchak was their offensive line coach, same thing. Take journeyman linemen and turn them into something.
Your guy
was such a good coach.
Your guy Stoutland with the Eagles, man, is a staple. Really good coaches. We'll talk more about the possible solutions for this top of the hour. We got a bunch of big questions coming out of the long weekend here that we should get answers on, I would imagine, in the next 24 hours between D'Amico Ryan speaking to the media later today and the trade deadline tomorrow. So we'll get to that at 7 o'clock. This is a kind of a key day for the Astros here. This is the day that they've got their exclusive window to negotiate with Alex Bregman expires at 4 o'clock today. Well, a lot of deadlines, man. We got a trade deadline tomorrow. We got the Breggy deadline at 4 o'clock today. But when the season ended last week on Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever the Yankees spit the bit, Wednesday, that as soon as that was over, that triggered the 5-day window the Astros have to make an offer to Alex Bregman. I've not heard from any source yet what the offer is or if the offer has been made, but they've got till about dinner time today to get it done.
Were you hoping that he'd pull a Colby Rasmus and just sign the qualifying
offer? Have they even made the qualifying offer to him?
I don't think so. That's a formality that whenever they make he's not going to pull a Colby Rasmus.
No. I think it was Ari Alexander of Channel 2. It was Ari had a piece. Ari talked to some guys in personnel in baseball on the condition of anonymity. And the ballpark for everybody, there were eight of them. Two of them thought that Bregman would be coming back to the Astros. The other six all had deals that were anywhere from like 5 to 7 years for anywhere from like 130 to 180 million. You know what I mean? They were all like forecasting what Bregman was going to make on the open market. Do you have a confidence level here that Alex Bregman remains an Astro? Have you been holding steady, or where are you at? Like, where are you at right now with Bregman?
I think the only I was going through as Hunter Brown signed with Scott Boras this weekend, or at least it was reported that he signed with Scott Boras. You know, I always do that thing where like, hey, everybody, calm down. Like, not everybody goes to free agency with Scott Boras.
Yeah.
Because like Altuve has signed two extensions with Scott Boras, and yet when I look at Scott Boras's notable exceptions that aren't Altuve, all of them are 6 years or more. And, you know, like, are the Astros going to break their longstanding rule against signing six-plus-year extensions? I just have to say probably not. Until they actually do it, I'm guessing probably not.
I wonder, we always talk about the Astros side on this. I wonder what Bregman's side is just in terms of how he views the organization right now. How he views the window. They are in a bad situation right now with their, I'll call it, kind of salary cap, for lack of a better way to put, competitive balance tax, the luxury tax. They're in bad shape. They are spending tens of millions of dollars this coming season on guys who will play no baseball for them this year. Jose Abreu's on the payroll for another year. Rafael Montero's on the payroll for another year. That's $30 million right there. Who knows what Lance McCullers is at this point? They're $17 million. Christian Javier's probably not going to pitch for this team this year. I'm going to assume he's not going to, because all these guys that get Tommy John seem to get pushed off. They get, hey, they'll be back in July or August. Oh, wait, no, they won't. So that's $12 million for Javier. That's $60 million right there that you're paying guys to do nothing for you this year. And you're already up against it.
I guess the only counter to that is, all right, when it comes to handicapping which team you're going to go to, outside of the Dodgers and the Yankees, is there a franchise where you think, no matter what happens, they're going to be competitive over the next several years?
Probably not, but there's ones that are better set up to be competitive than the Astros and have a willingness to go beyond the luxury tax than the Astros do.
I guess that's a fair point. In handicapping it, in the older you get, the more you realize it. I can't try to pick the spot that I think is going to win a championship, because that's why Vegas makes so much money. Because it's really, really hard to do unless you're just flat out going to a team that is willing to spend oodles more than everybody. And even then, obviously, it doesn't always work out.
All right, let's get to headlines. Up next, we've got a couple.
I just used the word oodles. Ugh.
It's okay, man. It's, yeah. It's a two-hour
show.
Hey,
Sean, how do we connect with Gen Z?
I don't know. They're a bunch of nincompoops, Seth.
I'm gonna have Brandy get a beehive hairdo, and I'm going to use words like oodles.
Oodles, nincompoop. Yeah. All right, let's get to headlines. Big day in the NFL yesterday. We will thank the Vikings again for doing the Texans a solid. Some big news for a soon-to-be Texans opponent as well that we'll get to in headlines. And there was one accolade for the Astros yesterday that we'll get to in headlines as well. Stay there.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's start with the Texans. We'll make this part quick, then we'll get to the NFL Sunday. Kenyon Green out for the season. So the one thing we are saved from, Seth, and I feel bad for Kenyon Green, the person. Anybody that gets injured and out for the season, he did work very hard to get back on the field this year, so that part does suck. From purely a football standpoint, it does save us from one angle in the whole left guard conundrum right now, which is, do they continue to trot Kenyon Green out there? That obviously will not happen.
Yeah, they didn't, and it's notable that they didn't actually bench Kenyon Green as Quinnen Williams was repeatedly taking shots at C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
Kenyon Green was removed from the game because his shoulder was dislocated.
Right.
We don't know, and Kendrick Green came in and did some good things, had some really bad reps too. It's not like Kendrick Green all of a sudden is the great hope there at left guard. I think if the Texans don't trade for anybody, that's got to be Jarrett Patterson. But I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking. I don't know what they expected to happen. If they were trying to get some kind of trade value out of Kenyon Green, I think playing him against Quinnen Williams was probably the dumbest possible thing they could have done. And now certainly he's not going to get traded for anything notable with a dislocated shoulder.
Yep. So he's done for the season. D'Amico Ryans meets with the media today at 2 o'clock, so hopefully we'll get some answers to some things. We'll talk about the big – I've got at least four questions still that are kind of open-ended here that we should get some clarity on, I think, in the next day or so. We'll do that at the top of the hour. It was a fun day of NFL football yesterday, culminated by Sunday Night Football last night, where the Vikings were kind enough to do the Texans a solid and defeat the Indianapolis Colts in Joe Flacco's – I'm not going to say his first game as a starter. He has started a couple games this year, but this is the first Joe Flacco start where really the keys have been handed over to him, you know, where it's he's going to be the guy moving forward. The other two starts were Anthony Richardson's hurt again, so he's just going to be a placeholder. This looked a lot like the Joe Flacco that we saw in the playoff game last year against the Texans last night. That was not good. 220 yards of total offense for the Colts last night.
He's got a shelf life in any given season, and it looks like the shelf life was just shorter this year.
Yeah.
Than it was last year. And look, that Browns roster, as we've known, has been a really good roster for a long time, and he doesn't have the same weaponry there with him with the Indianapolis Colts. I feel like Sam Darnold could have been Joe Flacco in that game too. There's flaws with the Vikings. I think there were a lot of things that were promising early on, but I didn't watch that game, and I didn't watch the second half. The first half was just a comedy of errors. It was uglier. It was almost as ugly as the Texans versus Jets first half.
Yeah, it was bad.
Where it just looked like two teams that just couldn't do anything right.
Well, it was wild. Someone pointed out on the text page that the Texans led 7-0 at the half and lost 21-13.
Yeah,
the Colts led 7-0 at the half and lost 21-13. That was it was very strange. It's strange.
Solidarity, AFC South.
Yeah,
AFC South.
I'm with you on Darnold. He will be a limiting factor for them in the NFC race. But in the meantime, good on the Vikings to keep the Texans' lead in the AFC South at 2 games with the tiebreaker over the Colts. Got to watch a lot of the Lions and the Packers yesterday, Seth, and I got to tell you, the Lions are really, really good at football, and they are expected to trade for Za'Darius Smith here in the next 24 hours from the Browns, the edge rusher, to replace injured Aiden Hutchinson. I don't know. Aiden Hutchinson's a great football player. He was the front runner for Defensive Player of the Year. they seem to be operating pretty well without Aiden Hutchinson, this Lions team.
And yet, well, I think there's the Lions team, despite the fact that they're rolling over people every single week. They've had to blitz a lot more, and I think they look at, okay, what's our... We got to be able to generate. We can't be blitz. We can't be living on the edge all the time like this. We want to just be able to rush with four, and Za'Darius Smith should help them with that. I think the one thing, if I look at, you know, obviously if we set aside all the Texans offense issues for a little bit, one thing that D'Amico brought up after the game, which is 100% true, is just the tackling. I mean, the Texans tackling started off the season really good. They were really sound and secure, and it feels like it's just slowly degraded to the point where you're giving teams way too much extra easy yardage.
Yeah.
You watch the Lions play and David Montgomery, who it seems like on average it takes like eight people to bring him down.
Yeah,
get your tackling right before you play these guys on Sunday Night Football.
It's a good team, man. It is a really good team. The Lions open the week as a 5-point favorite over the Texans, which sounds more accurate than the 2.5 that the look ahead line was about a week ago. So 5-point favorite over the Texans here at NRG Stadium. Texans got to bring their A game on Sunday, man. No doubt about
Nico.
That.
Nico. It's got to be all about Nico. We don't even know if Nico's coming back or not. I feel like some people are getting a little too excited without actually hearing the news that Nico is definitely coming back. He's eligible to return, but that doesn't mean that he's gonna return.
Yeah, we'll hit that in the 7 o'clock segment for sure. The other bit of news with a future Texans opponent, once they're done with the Lions on Sunday Night Football, it's on to the Cowboys and Monday Night Football. Dak Prescott pulled a hamstring and the Cowboys lost to Atlanta yesterday. And no word yet on the severity of it. I think he's getting an MRI on it today. His rhetoric after the game was, hey, no, you know, I'm going to do my best to be out there. It's a hamstring, though. We know firsthand, Nico Collins, hamstring, out for 4 weeks. So as of right now, the Lions are what is on the Texans' plate right now. So the Texans themselves aren't even thinking about the Cowboys, but I am. And there's a chance we might get Cooper Rush on Monday Night Football in a couple of weeks. Seth, do you want Cooper Rush, or would you rather have Dak Prescott out there so the game has a little more marquee sizzle on Monday Night Football?
Huh. I don't give a damn about sizzle.
I don't either.
So I wanna,
just win,
I wanna,
baby.
Well, except I think right now you feel like, okay, this Texans team, like, for one, a complete collapse isn't out of the question, given that you just got beat by the Jets.
Yeah.
The damn Jets.
Yeah.
So but I still do think they'll win the AFC South, because there's nobody else in the AFC South that's looking better than the Texans right now. So, the question is just, whether you beat the Cowboys or not, that's not going to be the game that makes you feel better about the playoffs. This game versus the Lions is the only thing that can do that for you right now.
For now, yeah, until you get to Christmas week with the Chiefs and the Ravens, and I don't even want to think about that right now. If you want to,
what happened with Ezekiel Elliott yesterday?
He didn't travel with the team because of disciplinary reasons, and the detail that came out last night was that he's been missing meetings and showing up late, stuff like
that's
that.
That's a big surprise, huh? Yeah. That Hard Knocks. The last Hard Knocks the Cowboys did was 3 or 4 years ago by now, right? That was a bad look for Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah.
He looked like a guy that just was interested in eating candy and giggling uncontrollably about like bad jokes on the sideline.
Yeah, and that was back when he was averaging 5.5 yards a carry, and you can do that.
No, he was bad that year though. Too.
Oh, was
that
he?
Was,
okay.
That was the beginning of the end. Yeah.
Yep. Alex Bregman, congratulations. You win a gold glove, my friend. Alex Bregman wins the gold glove for third base yesterday. Just what the Astros needed, as they're 10 hours away from having to make a final offer to Alex Bregman here in free agency. He wins his first gold glove. Thanks a lot.
Baseball continues with this. Like they're counting the mail-in ballots or something. Why does it take so long,
I don't know,
to come out with these awards?
I had to check.
The ballots were in.
Yeah.
Just go ahead, tell us the results, damn you.
Well, and it gets announced in the middle of an NFL Sunday. You are buried. Yeah.
How are you this ham-handed and stupid about
it's
stuff?
It's weird. It's weird. All right, the four biggest questions for the Texans coming out of the semi-bye, I'll call it. It wasn't a bye weekend, but they had a long weekend here. The four biggest questions coming out of it, and I'm hoping we get answers on these, in the next 48 hours. That is coming up.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you news stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Biggest questions coming out of the semi-bye week for the Houston Texans as they had the three-day weekend to lick their wounds, and now they're back at it. They'll get back at practice on Wednesday. D'Amico Ryans meets with the media today. D'Amico and CJ will meet with the media on Wednesday. So it's back to a normal week this week as the Lions come to town for a primetime game, Sunday Night Football. The Lions, in my opinion, are the best team in football right now. They are a five-point favorite over the Texans. So as we embark on this week, here are the biggest questions I have for the Texans or about the Texans coming into this week, Seth. And I'm going to start with a cut from D'Amico here following the game on Thursday night. We've not heard from D'Amico since the post-game press conference on Thursday night. So there's still a lot of questions to be answered, especially with the trade deadline coming up. We'll get to that in a second. Here was D'Amico when asked, hey, man, CJ's taking a lot of hits. How sustainable is this whole thing?
Any time you get sacked that many times is not good enough, right? Don't want a quarterback getting hit. As many hits as we took is not good enough. And, you know, we got to make things adjust. We got to adjust. We got to change things moving forward.
We got to change things moving forward. Now, okay, so that could just be him saying things to say things to get through a press conference. But let's take it at face value. Let's take it literally. We know there will be change because change has been thrust upon them at the very least. There will be no more Kenyon Green. So there will be change.
Yeah,
we know that.
Yeah.
What are the possibilities? Like, if you had a handicap, what do you think the actual change? Is it just, hey, here you go, Jarrett or Kendrick. You're the left guard now.
No, I think that, for one, I mean, the offensive line, both in the run and the pass game, they just still look way too haphazard in how they're picking up stunts, how they handle movement by the defensive line. And it's, yes, the left guard is the easiest to isolate, but there's also times where Tytus Howard, Shaq Mason, Juice Scruggs just look kind of inept and flailing in space. Laremy Tunsil, not as much. I mean, Laremy Tunsil, I think, has bought in more to the run game this year than he ever had before, and he does some pretty damn impressive things. So as much as his false starts continue to pester us, it's the entire operation just isn't right. And I think that's where it comes back to coaching. There's too many times where they're flummoxed by basic stuff that you just wonder what are the rules that they're operating by? Why is this so difficult for them? Is it also just the fact of the matter is that Shaq Mason and Tytus Howard might not be as athletic as you thought they were, or Shaq Mason has gotten old.
Yeah, I think when D'Amico said that after the press conference last week, we were at a stage, especially with the offensive line, where a lot of Texan fans were just trying to grasp for anything that was going to tell us something's going to be different moving forward. And after a loss like that on Thursday, people are naturally very angry. I was very angry, for sure. People want their pound of flesh. I think that there were a lot of people hoping the change would be something in the coaching staff. That, hey, okay, like this is a fireable offense level performance by this offensive line. They are getting C.J. Stroud killed. They are making him jittery. Some of it's on C.J. too. Like, there's blame to be, but like, I have a feeling if C.J. Stroud were being protected competently, we would not be having any sort of conversation about performance levels with C.J. Stroud. He has proven when he is protected well, he is one of the best passers of the football in the league. So I think people were hoping, Seth, like, hey, position coach fired. Hey, news of a demotion, you know, that maybe they take play calling duties away from Bobby Slowick, either temporarily or whatever. I think that's what people were looking for. I think if there were something like that, we would have heard it by now, especially if they're, well, obviously, if you're going to let somebody go, do what the Raiders did and just do it right after the game last night. You know what I mean? There's no reason to sit and stew about it over the weekend. So is it the same guys coaching the same stuff when we start practice on Wednesday this week?
That's the hard part is, okay, with Chris Strausser, again, we'll go into the fact that they hired a guy who had no familiarity with a type of scheme like this, and he's trying to learn it on the fly last year. I think the presumption would be, okay, well, so by after an offseason spent, you know, refining techniques and coaching methods and all of that, that surely it'll be better this year. And I think maybe that was just a bad hire. That might have just been flat out a bad hire. And that goes back to, okay, why'd you hire? I mean, it's one of the most, it's one of the most frustrating things in the world in the NFL, Sean, is that as much money as you pay the players, as many resources as you have, sometimes they hire position coaches that just don't make any sense.
Yeah.
And part of that's because, you know what? The good position coaches tend to be under contract places.
Right.
They get, like you pointed out, Jeff Stoutland earlier, the offensive line coach for the Eagles, he's been there through three different head coaches. They stick with him. New head coaches come in and say, well, God, I'm not going to go out and find somebody as good as this
right
now. So, so where do you go find mid-season an offensive line coach that you feel better about? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, unless
maybe
they meet
Jeff Saturday.
Yeah, well, unless there's somebody on the staff they feel is an up and coming. You're right. Like, it's not, that would be a move that you would make because you think that some sort of jolt to that room would happen. Like, hey, oh my God, they just fired the position coach. Like, but I don't feel like that's a joltable room, if you want to know the truth. Like, I don't know. Look, if we're reading Kenyon Green's dad's tweets to mean anything, at least one lineman in that room is not a Chris Strausser fan, you know?
Yeah. And that's a tough one, you know, because there's always, obviously, people are going to stand up for their own and everything.
Sure.
So I try not to read too much into, you know, Kenyon Green's. What did he say about the Chris Strausser?
There was a tweeter that said, can we also get the, when Kenyon's injury was announced that he's out for the season, there was a Texan fan who said, can we also announce that the offensive line coach is out for the season as well? And Kenyon's dad replied, facts. That was it. Just one word, facts. Yeah. So,
there are plenty of good offensive lines that have questionable talent levels at various positions on their team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the guys that get beat quickly or the guys that just let people pass them by, and when it's happening continually with different players, not just Kenyon Green, that's where you got to start wondering whether it's the coaching itself or whether the scheme and Bobby Slowick's rules for how they're handling things are off or too difficult for these guys to manage. But it just continues to be this kind of stumbling basic, wait a second, I've seen high school offensive linemen pick up stunts better than these guys. What the hell's going on?
Yep. Just for some context, the pressure rate that the Texans offensive line allowed through the first 6 weeks, 32%. The last 3 weeks, 48%. A 50% increase in pressure on C.J. Stroud. So that's
false narrative, lazy narrative.
Yeah.
Lazy narrative.
Well, I wonder too, like between Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans, like how they're feeling this weekend, like having taken up for that group the last, like they've taken some bullets for that group the last couple weeks, and it's not gotten any better, you know? Like,
right.
I'd be pissed.
Listen, we trust you guys to get this done. We believe in you.
Yeah.
And this is how you repay me.
That's right.
Hey, once you're a cuckold, you'll remain. You know, it's just I trust her. It's all in the past. Like, yeah. There she goes again. She's got a new OnlyFans.
Question number two.
The O-line went out and got themselves an OnlyFans channel.
That is an OnlyFans
channel.
I will not subscribe to. Question number two. What does the trade deadline hold in store for the Texans tomorrow at 3 o'clock? Tomorrow at 3 o'clock is the trade deadline. Seth, I put up a poll, as I said I would last Friday, to Texan fans on what position they would like to see prioritized for tomorrow's trade deadline. No moves have been made yet by the Texans. You, of course, polled the fans informally a couple of weeks ago before we had Nick Caserio on the show, and the overwhelming selection then seemed to be a defensive back. You demanded that Nick trade for a defensive back. That has shifted greatly over the last two to 3 weeks. We did the interview with Nick after the New England game. So this is before the three-game stretch where it's gotten super, super bad with where it's averaged 48% pressures. 90% of the people in this poll would like a guard.
This is where I stand with
90.
It. This is actually
this is as unified as the fan base has ever been on something.
when I had my rant on my YouTube channel at 2 a.m. on Friday morning, I kind of was teed off because a couple people had accused me of just ignoring the big issue, which is offensive line. And I don't. I start everything off with saying that this is a huge barrier, but I don't know what they can do to fix that. And like, I don't know if a coaching change makes a difference. I don't know, because it's that bad. So I do know that trading for a cornerback that can come in and cover guys like Davante Adams in man coverage instead of Jalen Petrie would be a big boost to that defense. Like, at this point, this is what I'm looking at. For the Texans to be genuinely better, I don't know exactly what they can do with the offensive line in season. And I don't think that just bringing in a swap out for Kenyon Green solves a lot of the other issues they've had, both with the interior and Titus Howard in the run game and everything else. But I do know that if they had cornerbacks that could cover in man better than the safeties they have doing it now, and I think if just Nico Collins comes back, those would make the team better, with or without a scheme change or anything else like that. That would actually make the team better. I don't know that bringing in a new guard at this point really makes that big of a difference, even if he's a veteran who knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
because I feel like he could be corrupted by all the filth around him.
To me, it's all about prices, and like offensive line and guard, I'm with you on the chances of that, so, you know, being some sort of elixir that solves everything. If they duked a day three pick, like a 6th round pick for some guard, a veteran guard from some team, I'm cool with them doing that. If it doesn't work, then you go with Jared Patterson. You know what I mean? Like, I'm cool with them trying things, but not to the extent that you're trading a 2nd round pick for a guy thinking it's going to fix things. Now, like a corner, I would trade a day 2 pick if it's a good enough corner that you're getting in return.
Yeah.
You know, a 2 or 3.
That's like bringing in a good reliever or something.
Yeah.
We're talking about the slot corner, because Jalen Petrie plays slot corner. He's not a slot corner.
Well,
and I spent all training camp wondering, like, what are they really going to stick? I specifically said Davante Adams at one point in training camp. Are they really going to stick Jalen Petrie across from like Garrett Wilson or Davante Adams in the slot and expect him to cover them man? Because he can't do it. I mean, it's not his fault. That's not who he is.
No,
he wasn't drafted to be a cornerback. And he was drafted to be a safety, and it turns out he wasn't even good at safety. So, like, you've got him in this star position, which is a hybrid of a lot of things. But this is, again, via Jason Bristol from KHOU. If what you're into is chubby, sloppy offensive lineman, if that's your thing, if that's what you're into.
It's kind of my kink. Yeah, give it to
it's
me.
It's only happened in the last 5 seasons, only 4 offensive linemen have been traded at the trade deadline. They are Ezra Cleveland, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, MD.
Was that the doctor? Yeah, the doctor.
BJ Finney and Austin Corbett.
Okay.
That's the sum total of all the offensive linemen traded at the trade deadline.
That's fine. Yeah, and I get it. Like, I understand the messaging with that is like, hey, this just doesn't happen very often. Maybe because teams feel like that can't be a big impact thing. My counter to that would be, this is so outside the realm of something that would fit into normal that I could see the Texans making a trade. And if it were Austin Corbett or whatever the 2024 version of that is for a day 3 pick swap, I'm totally cool with that if they think that might help the situation a little bit.
If it's a veteran who just flat out knows what he's doing and can come in and steady the ship a little bit, then the objection to bringing in new offensive linemen is usually, well, the continuity and the cohesion and all of that. Okay,
cohesion,
so
of what?
Exactly what continuity and cohesion are you disrupting, or would a veteran offensive guard be unable to adapt and grasp?
There's no doubt.
This intricate symphony of finely tuned instruments you have operating on the offense. No.
Yeah, for
it's
sure.
Not that way.
Quick text. We'll get to the last two questions I have here. 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. Mr. Optimistic texts in, I think Houston is going to riot if there's no move made this week for the Texans. I think fans will be very disappointed if there's not a trade at the trade deadline. Just in general, you know, like, because there's things that need to be fixed on this team right now. You know,
and we are in threatening a riot season right now. So,
predicting a riot. So, what will happen at the trade deadline? That's question number two. The other two questions I have are medical, and I don't know what kind of, and I guess there really should be three if we throw Jarrett Patterson in there because he's concussed or was last week, so I'll throw Jarrett Patterson in there. But number three for me, and you touched on it, Seth, there's this big assumption going on right now that Nico Collins is going to be back this week. We've not heard anything. We've heard reports and rumblings that he's doing really well. We've seen video of him working out, and he looks good. But that's a huge question, especially considering who your opponent is this weekend.
Right.
The Detroit Lions. Are we getting Nico Collins back this week?
Yeah, and Nico, I hope he's been feeling good for a couple weeks already and that you can feel that solid about it, because this is 100% the type of game where Nico might, if I were Nico and I felt like I was 90% and we were about to play the Lions, I'd be like, yep, 100%. I feel good, coach.
Feel good.
Ready to go. Nope. Nothing. And you want to get out there for this one,
and
right?
I'd be doing that thing where you take your elbows and you stretch your chest out like this. I feel great. And they're like, Nico, it's your hamstring. Why are you stretching out your elbows?
I would do some leg swings. I'd be like, yeah, look at this. Look at this. This is exactly the same.
Nico, it's the other leg that has your hamstring. See, I'm fine.
Oh, that's diabolical. Yeah, smart thinking. That's the kind of thing you could pull off without somebody really thinking about it too hard.
Looks good to me.
Wow, yeah, it looks good.
Looks good, yeah.
And then later on, he's like, wait a second, that's the wrong leg.
Right. I think the bigger question for me, Seth, and this is the last one, then we'll start acknowledging some people from this weekend. How bad is the Will Anderson ankle injury? We've heard nothing about that over the weekend. And I think the ray of hope for me with the Will Anderson ankle injury, and keep in mind, Will Anderson is a guy who missed training camp and missed multiple games last year with ankle injuries, is that he was really, really trying to get back in the game on Thursday. Now, I don't know how much of that is adrenaline or whatever they shot into his ankle at halftime. I have no idea. They have to have Will Anderson out there on Sunday. I mean, they can win a game without him, but it sure would be a whole lot easier with him out there on Sunday.
There's twofold with Will Anderson. Okay, the immediate concern of, yes, he needs to be out there. The second is just, yeah, he seems to, so far in his young NFL career, he seems to have chronic ankle issues.
He does. And I mean, this one got rolled up pretty good, I will
say. Right. Good point. This wasn't him just spraining it or something. Yeah. That's a really good point. I think a lot of people would have gotten ankle issues, especially when you've got a history of ankle sprains. Sometimes you can aggravate it real quickly, and it feels like your foot's going to fall off for a while, but it recovers quickly,
yes,
too. So hopefully it was as simple as that. But you're right. Yeah, with him moving on the sideline and everything, at the very least, yeah, maybe that's a good sign. The ankles, you know, we saw Joe Mixon try to come back into the game in the Bears game, and it's that next day when you find out, oh,
he
tried.
Right. That's a great point, man. Yeah, Mixon tried and I think got back in for a bit.
He did come back in.
Like Will did. And then went out for the rest of the game. And the next thing you know, yada, 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 he's gone for 3 weeks.
And it was simple. Sam Warren has a really good piece in the Chronicle on this where he just showed when Will was in there, A, he's affecting the quarterback, or B, if he's not affecting the quarterback, it's because the Jets were keeping a tight end in.
Yeah.
You know, so they just had, when Will was in the game, Aaron Rodgers had three wide receivers to choose, three receivers out on routes. When Will Anderson wasn't in the game, he had four guys out on routes.
Yeah.
And it was a lot easier for him to cut up the blitz when Will Anderson was out.
And it's Aaron Rodgers who, say what you will about age 40, but he still sees everything. You know what I mean? Like, he ain't Sam Darnold where he's going to be missing wide open guys, you know?
He did have a couple of I heard a lot of people who have been watching the Jets all year say he's basically making those same throws that just happened to that Garrett Wilson shin catch, the Garrett Wilson catch when Jalen Petrie was trailing in coverage. Like, some of those that were just very low percentage probability throws that weren't going the Jets' way definitely went their way that night. Like, say, the Jets' offense, I mean, they marched down on three straight touchdown drives. I'm not saying the Texans defense allowed that, but it wasn't like you come out of that game thinking, oh wow, the Jets are a machine. Mm-hmm. I just felt like, oh wow, no, the Texans can't even put down this team. Look at what they allowed Aaron Rodgers to do.
Yeah. 5 Hour Energy fan line. Vikings traded for Cam Robinson and he played well last night. Yeah, he had a holding penalty in there, some penalty, a pre-snap penalty, but he was good. I mean, they had to do that though. They lost their best Duracell, their left tackle. Like, they needed a left tackle. So that was a good trade
for Cam Akers, too.
And he looked good last night. the Acres looked good last night. Damian Pierce didn't play on Thursday. Yeah.
I was looking at the Texans' inability to run in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, wait a second. I got to remember it. Because I went back this morning to watch some of the runs again. And they actually ran the ball pretty well in the third quarter. It was in the fourth quarter when they got down into the red zone. And that's where it's kind of important to run the ball. That's
yes.
where they fell apart. They can't run the ball in the red zone.
Nope.
When everything gets compressed, they got destroyed. So that part of it, I don't know if that's good or bad. Hey, in the middle of the field, they were still just fine. It was when they got down to where you have to run. This is why they're running wildcat and everything.
Yeah.
Poorly.
Yep.
They ran that wildcat really, really poorly.
Really poorly. Because
the offensive line has to sell the run, and they didn't look one bit. Not a single one of
them
looked
like it was a run play on that. They're not good salespeople at all. Let's acknowledge. Let's do it. We do it every Monday at about this time. We acknowledge big performances from over the weekend. And big performances in general. We do it in a segment called Acknowledge Me. I will say some names. Ben Gary, our producer, will
acknowledge me.
Hotkey there. Veteran running backs that were cast offs from their team this offseason.
Acknowledge me.
I'm going to acknowledge Derrick Henry. Give me another one, Ben, for Derrick Henry. Thank
me.
You. 23 carries, 106 yesterday on the ground, 2 touchdowns. In a blowout of the Denver Broncos, both these teams are 5-3 coming into this game, and you really got a feel for like, okay, one's 5-3 where they've kind of lost focus for a couple of weeks. The other one is 5-3 because they've got an amazing defense and a rookie quarterback that can make a play here and there in Bo Nix, but they are a little fugazi. The Ravens destroyed the Broncos yesterday, and Derrick Henry was a big reason. He has scored a touchdown in every game this year so far, Derrick Henry. He's been an awesome pickup.
and Lamar Jackson became the first quarterback in NFL history to have 4 games with a perfect passer rating.
Man.
So I think that the one-time potential running back project of Lamar Jackson, I think he's safe. I don't think he's going to be a... I don't think they're going to move him to running back anytime soon, Sean.
No, yeah. I don't think so either. He seems to have found a home at quarterback.
I don't even want to think about the Ravens right now.
No, I don't either. I mean, you got the Lions this weekend. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Saquon Barkley.
Acknowledge me!
27 carries, 159 yards, 1 touchdown, and this crazy backward jump over a defender.
Hurts in the gun. He backpedals. He's looking. Still looking. He fires it out in the flat to Barkley, who beats one man, spins past another, leaps over a third, and jumps down at the 30.
What was that? I've never seen that move, and I've been watching football all my life.
Okay. Audio courtesy the Eagles Radio Network, as you can tell. If you haven't seen it yet, go find it. Saquon Barkley with, I've never seen that before, a backwards leapfrog splits over a player.
It looked like a football version of an and one tape.
Yeah.
It was like,
crazy.
Wow.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, you can get away with that in street ball, but not in the NBA.
Yeah.
That's okay, Saquon. Go ahead and try that in the NFL. Oh, okay. You just did it.
Yeah.
Okay. That was pretty cool.
It was awesome. Yeah. Cool. It was awesome. And he was really good in that game, too. Saquon Barkley's been awesome this year. Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley have got to be the front runners for offensive player of the year. You know, while we're on these running backs, the cast-off running backs, we'll call them, Joe Mixon.
Acknowledge me.
He's the only Texan I'm acknowledging today. That's it. He's the only one. Joe Mixon is a dog who brings it every week. If we could take whatever's inside Joe Mixon's heart and put it in the offensive line, Joe Mixon will be rushing for 200 yards every week, not a mere 105 or whatever he's averaging.
And yet, I almost feel like just as CJ started to show some of the effects of porous blocking and protection, to where I think even on plays where the protection is good, sometimes CJ looks a little rushed and hurried.
You think Mixon's getting
I think Mixon's almost starting to second-guess some things. There's times
that.
Where I'm like, gosh, it looks like he's... You never want the running back to fall into that position where they feel like they got to hit a home run every play. And there's a few times, I mean, Mixon's got a little bit of that in his game because he's so good with his jump cuts and cutting it back across against the grain and everything. There's times with imperfect blocking where I feel like, oh boy, if he would have just hit it there. But it's hard. It's not anything where I feel like it's his fault or anything.
Yeah.
It's just he's not always getting a clear picture. So I don't want it to corrupt him the way it's corrupted
CJ. Don't plant that seed, man. I don't need Mixon getting affected by this janky offensive line. All right, Joe Burrow.
Acknowledge me.
Joe Burrow. He had 5 touchdown passes yesterday. And as I was watching the games yesterday, and I'm watching the Bengals continually score in their game, I thought to myself, why did you dye your hair blonde before the season? That was one of the dumbest decisions. As his hair becomes more and more its normal color, he looks more and more like the Joe Burrow everybody anticipated. It's almost like whatever was put in his hair was what was keeping the Bengals down for the first month and a half of the season.
I don't like that he dresses like Billie Eilish. That's a is a very Billie Eilish vibe out of Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
I think that was bad too. It's not like he's just dressing kind of like hip hop or anything.
Right.
He's dressing like a funky white dude from the 90s.
Yeah.
There's something going on with Joe Burrow.
Got to be presidential.
At least there was. Maybe he's gotten a little bit more back to basics.
Got
to
be presidential, man. I'm like, man, who did the Bengals play yesterday again? Oh, that's right, the Raiders, who fired their whole offensive staff last night. Luke Getsy fired by the Raiders. All right, Alex Gorish.
Acknowledge me.
He is the head coach. This might wind up in the Pettycast tomorrow, too. He's the head coach of South Florida. And if you haven't seen the video yet, especially you Cougs out there, because I know the Cougs all hate Tom Herman like he's like he's the plague right now. The handshake, the coach handshake after the game, after USF, South Florida's win over Tom Herman's FAU squad, Florida Atlantic, 44-21, it was a blowout. The coaches normally shake hands and exchange pleasantries at midfield. Gorish was not sticking around for any pleasantries. He barely touched Herman on the hand and kept walking. This is the winning coach did this to Herman. What did Herman do? Well, take a listen here. Here's the play-by-play after that.
They run for more than 300 yards. The defense ties his school record with 7 sacks. And Tom Herman and Alex Gorish getting into it as they're coming off the field.
That is the definition of a rivalry right there.
Yeah, that's a rivalry, folks.
Yeah, that was Andre Ware and Anish Shroff. Gorish, not Gorish, Gorish. Herman is chasing him down and waving like, get back here. Hey, you get back here. You're going to shake my hand. Get back here. I should mention that FAU won the game last year between these two teams 56-14. So I saw the post-game press conference, or at least bits and pieces of it, with Gorish, and it sounded like there was still some hurt feelings from some things that happened at the end of the game last year. You know, I think Herman might have kept his foot on the gas pedal a little bit at the end of the game.
Went for two.
Did he?
In a blowout. Yeah.
So Gorish promised coming into the season that...
Herman wasn't happy with Gorish after USF went for two up big in a blowout. Last year, Herman had called an onside kick for FAU up big against the Bulls.
Okay.
So it's a... Yeah, it goes back to...
Dude, Herman is
Gorish's face as he snubbed him. It was just like a quick stern look at him and then a walk away.
Herman's the guy. Like Herman will reply to you on social media. Guy, you know what I mean? Like Gorish did something that was passive aggressive and a little disrespectful to Tom Herman, and he's going to reply to your tweet 5 times as to why were you disrespectful to me. He got exactly what he wanted right there. He got a reaction out of Herman.
Was Herman surprised that Gorish would be, you know, pissy about the last year? Herman went, he kicked an onside kick when they were up big, and did he expect no retribution whatsoever?
Yes, I think Herman is. I think he gets uptight with anybody that doesn't treat him like he's the cat's ass. That's Tom Herman, man, in a nutshell.
I am the Florida Atlantic head coach, and you will respect me as such. This state belongs to me.
That's right. This state belongs to me, FAU and USF.
Mm-hmm.
Willie Fritz.
I'm
going to acknowledge the actual Cougars head coach, not the guy who left for Texas. The Cougs beat Kansas State on Saturday, 24-19. It's a game that was delayed for an hour because of weather back here in Houston. I say back here. I wasn't here. I was in Louisiana. The highest-ranked opponent the Cougs have beaten a long, long time. It's the first win over any ranked team since 2019. And the Cougs have won 3 of their last 4. They're 4-5 on the season, so they've still got some work to do to get bowl eligible. But they've won 3 out of their last 4, and the 3 wins are over TCU, Utah, and Kansas State. Like, those are some really good college football brand names that the Cougs are beating these last, you know, over the last month or so. So credit Willie Fritz, man. He's got the program going the right direction.
And especially, I mean, you score twice in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
It's a reinvigoration over there.
Gutsy. Gutsy. I like it. So props to Willie Fritz and the Cougs. As long as we're talking about college football, Lincoln Riley.
Acknowledge me.
I just have to acknowledge him. I saw somebody point this out. I'm like, this is too good not to acknowledge. Lincoln Riley, who left OU to go to USC, he had a great thing going at OU, but he left to go to USC because USC paid him a ton of money, gets to live in California, all that, this and that. He gets to USC, and within a year or two, they leave to go to the Big Ten. So now he's having to fly all over the country to play these cold weather games. OU, and there's a lot of conjecture that he didn't want to go to the – he thought – that leaving the Big 12 for OU, like the OU leaving the Big 12 was a bad idea because the SEC is tougher than the Big 12. But you were the king of the Big 12 at OU. As it turns out, those people may be right. OU is 1-4 in the SEC. Say what you will about Lincoln Riley, they'd be better than 1-4 in the SEC with Lincoln Riley as a head coach. Meanwhile, USC is 2-5 in the Big 10. I am acknowledging Lincoln Riley because he managed to destroy these two blue blood programs single-handedly within 5 years, and he's making $100 million while doing it.
That's
really impressive, you know?
College football coaching, it's a crapshoot in the NFL, obviously, but college football, it feels like it shouldn't be this big of a crapshoot.
Right.
And I know the landscape has changed, but you still do have natural recruiting advantages, whether it's with transfer portal guys or high school kids, that it doesn't seem like it should be this difficult to be a good coach at a school that's got a whole lot of natural advantages. Yet, here we are.
Yeah.
I feel like the USC job is one of those jobs where it's like, okay, if somebody wants it too much, then they might not be the right guy. Like this whole, I was the first to say, like, how much does, you know, being in Southern California really appeal to an actual football coach?
Right.
Because the actual football coaches don't spend much time outdoors other than at practice.
Mm-hmm.
It really shouldn't be that much of a pull. And then you saw the house that Lincoln Riley got. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I think that might have been your biggest indicator was that, okay, this guy was a little too into Southern California.
Yeah, and Southern California, like the USC fan base is not, like the OU fan base is really angry right now. Like the USC fan base, I feel like doesn't get SEC level angry, or
they're way more blasé about it than most college.
Yeah, they're like, all right, on to the Dodgers, you know, or on to the Rams, or whatever.
Yeah.
So, as long as Lincoln Riley can sit through the pain of the press conferences after the game, it's like, I'm sitting on a pile of money. I still have a reputation as a great offensive mind and play caller and developer of quarterbacks. You look around the league, you know, yesterday, Kyler Murray's going against Caleb Williams. Those are literally two Heisman Trophy winners that Lincoln Riley developed. You know, like tonight, Baker Mayfield's playing. You know, Jalen Hurts had a big game. Like, these are all guys who, Spencer Rattler, it hasn't been quite as good, you know, like with the Saints, but he's still in the NFL. So, yeah, man, Lincoln Riley just chilling with $100 million and destroying programs out there. Good job, Lincoln Riley. All right, that's Acknowledge Me. We cited some social media drama with at least one Texan or a Texan family member that we'll get to in the next segment, but it pales in comparison to the drama going on 5 hours east of here. Holy crap. The drama going on with the Saints right now is some crazy stuff, and we'll tell you where the drama is with the Texans as well as we get ready to hand things off to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris at the top of the hour for a Texans Monday. Stay there.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
This might be better suited for the Pettycast, so it probably shows up again tomorrow at 8 o'clock when Seth and I get petty and acknowledge good pettiness. Where does Kenyon Green's dad taking a one-word run at Chris Strauser rank on the petty or social media drama scale? For those who missed it, at CMallory7, a Texans fan on Twitter, replied to the news of Kenyon Green being knocked out for the season with his shoulder injury with, is it possible for our O-line coach to go out with injury as well? Because that guy is worthless, all caps. Henry Green, facts, 5 exclamation points. Not one, 5 exclamation points. Facts.
Yeah, yeah.
Where's that stack up?
I, I don't know. I feel like it's a minor drama potentially where a family member is, you know, speaking up on behalf of his son.
Yeah.
And I don't want to read too much into it because it could be, I mean, this could happen on the best football team in the world, and it could happen on the worst football team in the world.
True.
A parent sticking up for his son.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've seen this at various times in the past. Xavier Suofilo left here and at least was serviceable elsewhere for a long time. I mean, I think he's still in the league.
He was, of a couple of years ago. I know that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, there's enough disjointedness on the offensive line right now that it is really hard to just... It's really hard to account for the individual things that happen every game where the offensive line just looks incapable of handling simple stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's not even amongst the players who are otherwise playing well. There's just too many instances where you're like, how did they miss this guy? How did they not anticipate this? All of those things. And yeah, I think a lot of that comes back to, for me, it's hard for me to pin it on anything other than the coaching, including Bobby Slowick. It's sometimes with offensive linemen, you know how I always feel about this. They tend to be pretty intelligent guys.
Yes.
And usually if it looks like they don't know what they're doing, that's because the scheme is asking them to do things that are too difficult or it's not being coached up properly.
Yeah.
And not to excuse the players themselves, but there's just it's a disheveled mess a lot of the time.
Yep. As far as social media drama goes, the Henry Green tweeting facts pales in comparison to what's going on in New Orleans right now. If you missed it yesterday, Chris Olave, Ben, we have the highlight. Chris Olave, wide receiver for the Saints, former teammate of C.J. Stroud's at Ohio State, almost died on the field yesterday, it looked like. He took a hit over the middle in the Saints' loss to the Panthers. It was brutal.
Carr to throw, Dustrow up and incomplete.
It's going to be a flag.
Yeah, they went to the head of Chris Olave. 1, 2, 3, 4 flags, but Olave is down.
He is hurt. He has not moved at all. A guy the last couple of games that have struggled with concussions, and Chris has not moved at all.
Yeah, of all the people to take that hit, Olave, that's his fourth concussion. Michael Thomas, former Saints receiver, went on a tirade on Twitter at Derek Carr about this.
Yeah.
Derek Carr, for you, I've been told all bleep sad. Derek, dude's scary and panic and just throws the ball. Get him the F out of there. He's ass. That year, his buddy went first team all pro, talking about Devontae Adams in 2022. Carr needed 180 targets just for him to catch 100 passes. He's ass on my granny.
On my granny.
On my granny. He's granny ass is what he's saying. Dude tried to lie and say I was jealous of them making Olave wide receiver one the whole time. He can't even get him a decent ball. He needs his ass whooped.
I think one of Olave's family members co-signed that
they
one.
They did. It was Olave's brother. He co-signed. I'll find it. He co-signed a tweet by somebody out there. So now there's family members in this drama as well.
Weighing in on behalf of Michael Thomas saying, yeah, he wasn't jealous of Olave. This is another dicey one because Michael Thomas has been kind of an erratic individual himself.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, Derek Carr's proclivity for throwing guys into danger, it's not like it's a new thing or anything.
No.
He did become the first quarterback in history to lose to 31 different NFL franchises.
Good for him.
Yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know which... I'm sure he's lost to the Saints before. I don't know which one he hasn't lost to yet, okay, but maybe he'll get there.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll get there someday.
I saw some stat, like the all-time leading losing quarterbacks through certain seasons in the NFL, and I wish I had it in front of me. How many games they've lost
by year three, by year four,
correct.
By year five.
Yeah, and year three, David Carr. Year four, David Carr. Year five, David Carr. Year six, David Carr. And then in year seven, Derek Carr. Year eight, Derek Carr. Like, the Carr brothers had a stranglehold on this. Like, the most losingest quarterbacks in NFL history through X amount of years was David Carr forever until Derek Carr took the title.
Okay, so this makes sense. The only team Carr hasn't lost to is the Raiders.
Okay.
And they play the Raiders in week 17.
Oh, that's a clash of the Titans right there, huh? The Saints and the Raiders.
If Carr is healthy and starting in that game, he'll have a chance to lose to all 32 NFL franchises. Which is actually, it's a... It's impressive. It's impressive in a way. You know, like to be around that long
yes.
and to lose to that many different teams and still be the starting quarterback is impressive.
That used to be the thing in baseball. Like if you lost 20 games in a season as a pitcher,
yeah.
your ERA was actually probably better, sometimes significantly better, than a guy who was 10 and 11 for some good team. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like because they still kept trotting you out there for enough games to lose 20 games because you're actually a decent pitcher on a crappy team.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a fair – you're right. That is a little bit impressive. But, boy, Michael Thomas, he is not happy with Derek Carr at all.
I'm just pissed off.
Michael Thomas
is just out there right
off.
Now, right? Yeah.
He's out there. I had seen somebody tweet – I'm not reporting this as news. I've not seen any reports of this by anybody. But somebody tweeted out, like, hey, Michael Thomas on his way to Houston for a tryout. Like, oh, okay, we'll see. I don't know if that's – he wasn't good the last couple of years. Like, he was –
I wonder if he's got an Ohio State connection with CJ at all.
I feel like CJ has an Ohio State connection with anybody that went to Ohio State.
That's true. I mean, I've definitely met each other at some event or something along the way. But,
yeah, for sure. Let's see. A few texts on the 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. This is from Middle Screen. Middle Screen says, the Texans needed Mixon to be the dynamic change of pace threat to an explosive passing game. Instead, the team is built around Joe Mixon. This is about as good as a team built around Joe Mixon can be.
I think, honestly, if you're looking for hope with the return of Nico Collins, I would say look at A.J. Brown going to the Eagles, perhaps. And like when A.J. Brown left the Titans, in the modern NFL, even though running backs are making a resurgence this year, I think it's as often that it can be a wide receiver that's the straw that stirs the drink for everybody else. And that Nico Collins, even though it doesn't fix the issues you have with the offensive line, but it can spackle over some of the issues. The issues the Texans are having with dealing with the blitz over these last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Look, screens to Nico. This team can't set up screens to save their damn life, except when they're just throwing a quick screen to Nico Collins. He's got to beat somebody out in space. Like some of the things, Nico Collins over the middle on slants, some of these things they can do to help kind of back the defense off of you. Nico Collins makes he doesn't fix the offensive line, but he masks their issues a lot better.
No, but if he's the difference between the Texans having a good offense and whatever this has been the last few weeks, and he's the difference between CJ getting killed and not getting killed, he's the most underpaid player in the NFL.
It doesn't all of a sudden turn them into a credible Super Bowl contender, but I feel like they at least can have more fight than they've had recently.
Seth? Antibodies to you, my friend.
Oh, yeah, antibodies and
stuff.
See
you tomorrow. Yep. John Harris and Mark Vandermeer are up next with Texans Monday. So we will see all of you tomorrow at 6 a.m.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.